Since the show began almost 2 years ago, A Change of Tune has highlighted some of the best up-and-coming artists out of these West Virginia hills, with podcasty chats ranging from Ona to Quiet, Sean Richardson to Jordan Andrew Jefferson, and beyond. But those interviews have been a bit infrequent. And since West Virginia Day was this past month, and with A Change of Tune's second birthday on the horizon, we thought we'd do something special. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews that range from Morgantown alt rockers and Parkersburg singer-songwriters to West Virginia music venues and regional artist management and beyond, all of which contribute to this state's wild and wonderful music scene. And today we are chatting with John Ingram, a producer, composer, and bassist who was born and raised in Kanawha County. John's West Virginia music history is impressive, as he's played with the Bob Thompson Band, 600 Pounds of Sin, and Johnny Stats and the Delivery Boys, toured with Fletcher's Grove, and now leads his own jam band by the name of John Ingram's Slugfest. Now signed to Ian Thornton's Whizbang Booking and Management, John is ready for the next step in his career. Not to mention the next step for Charleston's budding music scene. John, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do?
Sure, yeah. My name's John Ingram, and I'm a bassist and composer, band leader, I guess now. And so, producing music the last year and a half, 2 years since I decided to become a band leader. And, so I've been dabbling with that. But I play with several different bands and have played with a lot of musicians in West Virginia. Among them would be Bob Thompson Unit, Johnny Stats and the Delivery Boys, Ron Soul, 600 Pounds of Sin, and my band Slugfest. And most recently, I've been doing some touring with the band Fletcher's Grove. It's a popular band in the jam band scene in West Virginia and regionally. So, but that's been a lot going on. So,
sounds like you have a lot on your plate. You've collaborated with a lot of folks over the years.
Yeah, and that's just right off the top of my head. So, yeah, it's been busy.
So how did you get started in music?
My mom's side of the family are musical, and so I got a lot of stuff through them, just I guess through osmosis, being exposed to the music. They were church musicians, Southern gospel, and did some country stuff. My grandfather played pedal steel and had some, bluegrass musicians in the family, and some, so it was kind of in that wheelhouse. But then I guess around the age of 12, I started playing trumpet, I think, and then kind of segued into guitar and then bass when I was about 13, 14, something like that, because the trumpet wasn't rocking very hard, so it wasn't garnering much attention.
You should have been rocking it harder, John. Maybe,
well, that's, somebody should have said that to me. I didn't have that kind of insight at 12, 13. So.
Okay, so you started in music, did the trumpet, then you moved into guitar and bass. Was this in Kanawha Valley? Was this in Charleston?
It was up until sixth grade or something when I joined the band in middle school, which is when I picked up the trumpet. I was in Kanawha County.
Okay.
But then I went to Winfield. So that's in Putnam County, for those listening who don't know where that is.
It's okay. So you over there in Winfield, what was that like making music?
Not ideal. people, a lot of folks in Appalachia and, West Virginia and just all over, I'm sure, can relate to growing up in an area that's less than diverse, and it definitely has its own culture, but I wouldn't call it diverse, so it's, there were a couple of folks that, we all latched on to one another, and we had a great music teacher at Winfield High School whose name is Scott Woodard, and he's actually at West Virginia State now doing really great things.
Oh,
and he's just been moving up the ranks, and really his whole thing has been great. But anyway, so my closest friend, in fact, I'll just tell you this quick story because it kind of ties into the question before, which was, how did I get into music? so when I was my best friends, the two best friends at the time, which were one was playing guitar and one was playing drums. And I said, you know, to the guys, I'm like, yo, I think I'm going to get a guitar. You know, I want to get a guitar. And they, you know, forget this trumpet and baritone stuff, brass stuff, you know. And they were like, oh, yeah, that's cool. They're like, well, why don't you get a bass? And then we already have the band, you know, and we can start a band. So it was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's a great idea. So I got a bass out of necessity because the other guys were like, hey, you know, we got a guitar and drums, so this is covered. So that's kind of like how every bass player starts. It's, you know, nobody chooses the bass. The bass chooses them. So
they could have told you like, hey, man, we really need an electric triangle. Could you just...
Yes. At that point in my life, I think at this point in my life, that still sounds like a great idea.
Electric triangle. Do you regret picking the bass? Do you think that really sums up what you want to do with music and what who you are?
It is who I am. I mean, I think it's just, I'm not sure what I love so much about the bass. I love the fact that to make people groove, to look out in the crowd and see people dance, to me is the ultimate compliment, to see people having a great time and is moving their bodies and living their lives, you know what I mean? And not being too heady or, you know, empirical or overthinking, you know, because once the groove takes over, I think everybody's experienced that, whether they know what the groove is, quote unquote, you know, but everybody's experienced that. You've been at a show or, you know, jamming in your car and you get just lose yourself and you enter that dream. To me, that's the ultimate. That's what I feel like I'm here to do, is just to make people feel good or to make people feel something. And that's what the bass, I feel like I'm able to do that with the bass. You know, I play other instruments and I love those other instruments and I write on them and I, you know, do stuff in the studio or even live and play, you know, different stuff. But there's something about the bass for me that just, it makes people move. And I just love that.
Yeah. Mention that. Slugfest. Yeah. You mentioned the word groove.
Yeah.
How would you describe the music of Slugfest?
Well, it's eclectic. Mm-hmm. I know that word gets used a lot, but it's it's a good, especially here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
What, Eclectopia? What? Yeah.
What's up, Jim? But yeah, I think, you know, we try to keep things kind of, you know, just a little weird, you know, but it all stays pretty funky. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the common thread, you know, even when we do stuff that's kind of country tinged or Latinish, you know, or any of that kind of different genre stuff or idiomatic stuff, it all still stays pretty funky, and it's all rooted in the jazz tradition, in the sense, because we're all jazz musicians, everybody in the band, you know, has a jazz background, so there's an element of improvisation. But the main thing, and this goes back to what we were saying about with the bass and just playing music, what I love about music is it all has to groove. You know, there's no, we really don't like to get into an area where it's too just inaccessible. Mm-hmm. Is that a word?
Yeah. That's okay. A word. Good job.
Inaccessible.
No, inaccessible. Yeah. Because I guess if it's too complicated, then people are like, oh, that's not for us. Like, we can't get into it.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's easy to scratch that a little too much with jazz at times. You know, you have to be kind of geared for that. If you're going to go see a jazz show, you have to know what you're, okay, I'm going to go hear some people get really out there, or mm-hmm. I'm going to hear them play a lot of notes. And I love that. I mean, you know, that's part of who I am, but you know, I love the jam band scene, and I love the Grateful Dead and Fish and what those bands, because there's a community there, you know what I mean? And there, it's bigger than music. The music is paramount in my opinion, but it's great to see communities of people, and you know, because that to me is again what music is about. It's about, you know, living your life, feeling good, feeling whatever you're trying to feel or whatever the music's trying to make you feel. And then people enjoying that together and building relationships. And so, I don't know.
You mentioned that you have a band that's full of great musicians. Do you want to talk about them a little bit? Who's in the band and what do they do?
I'd love to. Yeah. Lately the band has been, occasionally we have to sub some people out because we're all so busy, but the core of the group is Rendres Wharton on the keyboards. He's a fantastic keyboard player from the Elkins area originally, and he's living in Pittsburgh now, but plays all over the state, all over the region, in the East Coast, you know, and so on. Our guitarist is the amazing Ryan Kennedy, and, you know, anybody who knows Ryan knows that he needs no introduction or any kind of, you know, I don't know if I could even attempt to do him justice by talking about how amazing he is, but Ryan and I are great, dear friends, and we've gone back a long ways and played in Bob Thompson's band together for longer than I care to admit. So, so moving on, we also have Chris Hudson on the drum set. Fantastic drummer, played all over, played with, kind of like me, played with anybody, you know.
Anybody and everybody who could take you in.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. If it pays, we play, you know. So, and it's just a phenomenal drummer, and it's really can't, there's nothing he can't do on the drum set. You know, I throw him all this weird stuff, and it's just like, you know, okay, cool, no problem. So then, of course, we have two horn players, which kind of is, you know, what sets us apart from kind of some of the other, you know, bands in our wheelhouse, you know, in the area. So people really love the horns, and that's Chris Tanzi on the trumpet and Chris Clark on the tenor sax. And those guys have a great sound together, and we're really lucky to have them all.
What does it take to be a band leader in Slugfest or anything else you do?
You know, I've learned what I'm learning, doing it myself. I've been lucky, I should say, to have gotten to work with great band leaders, really respectful, talented, intelligent, you know, band leaders like Bob Thompson, you know, among many others. And I guess I've seen them and taken things from them. For this, what I'm learning in real time is, you know, more often less about the music and more about coordinating schedules and dealing with personalities and, you know, being tactful.
So you have to be like a teacher of sorts, like, yeah, no, you can't argue over that.
Right.
Get back to work.
Well, you know, I typically try to, yeah, get back to work. That's a popular one. Yeah, it's like, you know, let's rein it in. Things start, get the jokes start flying, and start having a few beers, and it's like, okay, let's get back to work here. So that's been, that's definitely a part of it, you know, and just knowing, picking your spots. And this is all non-musical, but this is like kind of not just personality stuff, you know, dynamics, you know, working with people. And so sometimes you just got to choose your spots, and some things you say and some things you don't say, because really, you know, some things don't help, you know what I mean? What I'm maybe thinking is saying, you know, why don't you try like this or that? And in my mind, those are good ideas, and they may be good ideas, but are they really going to benefit the rehearsal or the music at the end of the day? Or is it just going to make things more convoluted, or, you know, more create anxiety because the players are like, oh God, there's this other thing you wanted me to do, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes any sense. But.
Well, I think for anyone that listens to music, they don't really think about the effort it takes to actually make the music, because, you know, we think about, okay, the time it takes to write a song, or maybe the time it takes to get it from a single to an EP to a record because of the time difference. But actually the dynamics going into it of, like what you said, like the band sometimes doesn't want to really play. They want to joke around. They want a kid. They have different ideas that maybe aren't moving the bands into production.
Right.
And you have to be there to direct them, saying, guys, let's stay to task. Stay
right
on task. Let's do this.
Unfortunately, you know, the thing with all of us is, like, you know, everybody, we all love playing so much, and we're all players. I mean, it's what we all do, you know. But we have so much fun together. So it's like when you get in a rehearsal where I'll start cutting up and acting crazy or whatever, it's easy. But that's a good sign, because it means we're all having fun.
Yeah.
You know. We'll be right back.
You mentioned Bob Thompson a few times. It sounds like you really hate him.
Yeah, yeah. Just, I mean, like everyone else who's ever met the guy, you know. I've never, you know, known a man who is more gracious and more giving and has as much to give, you know, as he does. So, you know, this state, this town, this city, and it goes so far. His circle, you know, goes so far, you know, across the over the world, really. I mean, but he's just world class. I mean, and I'm so proud and happy that we have him here and that we've gotten to learn from him and just be around him and get all his good stuff.
How did you start making music with him? When did you meet him?
I was 15, I think, 15 or 16, maybe 16. And I met him at Jazz and Wine Festival, or Wine and Jazz and Wine, at the University of Charleston, which is coming up, actually. And we'll be playing there again this year.
Oh, great.
But we met then, and a mutual friend introduced us, you know, and I'm like this young bass player. And so this friend of ours said, "Hey, I want to introduce you to somebody." And so I met him, and he was just like, he, you know, "Hey, what's up? You know, how you doing?" Instant friends. And then so he said, "Well, hey, why don't you come up to the house sometime?" Just like he's done with Tim Quartz and Ryan Kennedy. Tim Quartz is his drummer and also plays keys. Of course, we talked about Ryan and Doug Payne, saxophone player in his band. And I mean, there are countless people, you know, who have done this, but went to his house, and it was just like, you know, come by, you know, and let's play some music. And so I'm here, I'm 16, playing with this legend,
yeah,
who, and I didn't even realize to what extent, you know, his legend was about, you know. And so then I went, started going to his house, and I think after the first time, you know, at the end of the session, we were hanging out at his studio, and I said, "Hey man, can I give you some money? How much do I owe you for this lesson?" And he was like, "Man, don't worry about that." He was like, "Just if you want to come up, you know, just come back and we'll play." And it was never about, you know, a teacher student relationship,
yeah,
per se. And I kind of picked that up from his observing his relationships with other people too. He doesn't, the greatest teacher, I read it, not to digress too much, but I read a quote, that Herbie Hancock was saying about Miles Davis, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, you know, the magic of Miles Davis was his ability to teach someone by letting them figure out the answer. It wasn't about, you know, here's the lesson and here's the answer. It was, here's the thing, here's the lesson or the problem or the task, mm-hmm, and then, you know, how do you figure that out? And then, you know, he might give you a little bit, you know, and then you're saying, "Okay, I'm getting it, I think," and then you might give you a little bit to keep you going, and then you're saying, "Okay," and then at some point you just kind of have this light bulb, and then once that light bulb sets off and you've discovered it on your own, and this is for anything in life, this is not just music, because this is, I mean, music reflects life. So this pertains to everything in life, but, you know, in all lessons, when you find something on your own, it means so much more, and it won't ever go away at that point, because we've all been in a class where somebody says, "This is this, and yep, that is that," and you're, yep, saying, "Okay, whatever, I took the test, now that's done, and now I'll never know that again,"
yep,
because it's
absolutely
gone out of my memory.
Yep.
So when you have you're in a class, or, you know, for me, it was like creative writing or music or things like that, where you have these moments, these watershed moments, and you go back and it's like, oh, you know, it left this mark on you, you know what I mean, because you found it yourself. I own that now. That's for me. That wasn't for anyone else, you know. That poem or that song or whatever was only for me at this point. And so that's what Bob did and does, you know, still for people, is that he once lets you find it, because he realizes the power in that, I think. So I'm discovering that, and that goes back to being a band leader. It's like such a powerful way of it requires such patience. I mean, yeah. The fact that Bob was so patient with me, and I'm sure with a lot of other people, you know, he's just like that. So it's powerful. Powerful thing.
Well, it's also age difference, too. I mean, you, at the time, were a teenager. Bob was probably, what, in his 30s or 40s, something around there?
Yeah, something like that.
He's timeless. He's ageless. But,
yeah, no, I think that's correct.
But then now, you're, you know, grown adult-ish, and then you're also dealing with other grown adults-ish. So that must be interesting, though, the dynamic. Like, you are their peer with Slugfest, but, you know, you are the band leader. It's not like, it's like an age difference. Like, you are the teacher, they're the adolescents that want to get, you know, go off campus and do things. Like,
right.
You do have to talk to them in a different way.
There's an interesting dynamic. And again, you know, I've had a lot of opportunity to be a sideman. I mean, I've made majority of my career based on being a sideman, bass player for other people, playing other people's music, which has been great because I've worked with so many different band leaders and different people and personalities. And you kind of learn how to navigate through those among those personalities and among those different frameworks, you know, because some people like to do it this way. Some people want to tell you, no, that's not right. It's like this. And you got to be like, hey, okay, that's fine. You know, I'm checking my ego. And then some people are like Bob and say, you know, yeah,
so.
How about like this?
So, yes.
So, you know, maybe you could try it like this. And then you try it like that, and you say, okay, yeah, it's getting pretty close. But again, he lets you kind of find it on your own by giving you some kind of framework. But, yeah, So. Thompsonism.
And you've mentioned before that you have kind of three roles or the three things in life you're doing, which is composer, producer, bassist. Which one do you think is the one that has played the biggest role in your life so far?
No question. I mean, playing bass for other people, you know, as being a sideman, which I think most of the people who know me maybe wouldn't suspect that I think it's kind of the opposite because of my personality and kind of boisterous and, you know, loud at times and stuff like that.
I don't think you're that loud.
Maybe not on the air, but it's kind of early too. So get a couple drinks in me maybe,
yeah.
And I'll start annoying you really fast. But the thing, you know, it just teaches such humility, and I try to get that. And also just an opportunity to play with other people and play other people's music. I really love that process of especially playing original music. When somebody says, you know, here's this tune, and they put a piece of sheet music in front of you, or they let you hear something, and they say, okay, now play on it, or, you know, and they're maybe have some idea of what they want you to do, but then it's up to me to be creative and create something that serves the song, you know what I mean? That's not serving me or serving, you know, any one person, but it makes the music happen and makes the music better. And that, to me, I really enjoy that process. But in the last several years, I've always been writing music. I've always written music since I started, just, you know, creating new things that, you know, oh, what's this? I like this. I like that. But in the last several years, I really have tried to put, you know, a concerted effort into writing and with intent, you know, with ideas, having clear concepts of what I want to do with the tune and then trying to execute that. And so that's been a really fun set of challenges for me. And I think I'm getting better at it, you know, and I feel like it's been a good thing for me because it's informed a lot of my other areas of music. And then the producing to me is like probably the most, I get so much joy from it. I don't know if I can say to get the most joy out of it, but it's like when you walk into a studio and you say, like, this is where I'm meant to be. You know what I mean? This is where, and you probably experienced this when you walk into the studio and you're just like, or into a setting where you're just in your element and it's like, I'm going to create this thing from top to bottom, you know, and I'm going to, you know, sift through it with a fine tooth comb and every little thing is going to get addressed. And it's just a really neat process. And then you get the gratification of the end game and the results of that hard work and tedious. It's very tedious and very labor intensive, you know. And then you get this piece of music at the end and it's like, holy crap, we made this, you know. And you look around at the guys and it's just such a joyful, you know, joyous feeling. So I love that.
Yeah. I know, I totally understand the producing thing. I mean, just going, you're right, finding that place where you belong, where you feel like it's your home. It's like your home away from home, even though it's an office space of sorts. Uh-huh. And just being able to do whatever and just really have fun and dig into it. I think it's like I could get here at 1 a.m. back to the station, and I could be exhausted, but I could still be excited about
right.
what I could be making or what I just finished creating. So
that's saying so much. I mean, I don't think people, I think we take for granted, those of us in this business, you know, in all different levels of this business too, because generally, you know, when we're talking about music, we're talking about people involved in media and broadcasting, involved in, you know, any type of creative outlet like that, we get so much joy from this. Mm-hmm. And we provide so much joy people. And so that is so, I mean, I think I take it for granted sometimes, you know, that people go through life, most people go through life maybe not liking their jobs or never experiencing that joy of, like, the work is its own reward. Not to go back to Bob, but I always cite this. And he's got so much insight, you know, so he's just given me so much. But he says, and I say this to other people all the time, but he says, you know, the reward is in the work, you know, in the music. The music is its own reward. And, you know, that's to say that, you know, getting to do what we love and getting to do for people what they love, is I mean, the reward is that is the reward, and it may not be monetary, or the accolades may, you know, be few and far between, or maybe they never come, but the fact that you're providing this thing for people that they can't get otherwise is so powerful, and that we're loving every minute of it, you know, even when we're tired and hungry and broke
and hungry
whatever.
And broke more broke.
Yeah, this is me, by the way, I'm talking about, in case you're curious.
No, hey man, tens of dollars in public radio. I kind of understand
tens
that. Tens
of dollars.
Tens of dollars.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, don't be jealous. Yeah.
Try playing bass. And
oh, yeah.
Talk to me.
Fives of dollars. Yeah. No, it's great. I love it. Yeah, I wouldn't change it for the world. And
you wouldn't.
I wouldn't.
I know that. I mean, I just know that. And I know that about so many folks who do the kind of stuff that we do. I mean, to me, the rewards are greatly outweigh the financial stuff and all that stuff. But, you know, that's easy for me to say because I've been given lots of opportunities. So,
well, and it's, I also like the fact that it is the local thing. It's us, like we're trying to make really interesting things happen in West Virginia that can then inspire other people to make really interesting things and continue this tradition.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's one thing that has impressed me so, so, so much in the last couple of years. And it's been, you know, just the community here. I mean, you know, people supporting each other and really doing it. You know, I mean, you've been a huge part of that. There's been a lot of bands that are really supporting one another and doing things the right way professionally and, you know, or being organized and having great, you know, cultivating a great image. I think of Quiet. Mm-hmm. I think of, you know, there's just so many. I could go on and on. The Horse Traders have, I mean, you know, of course, Ona.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's tons and tons. I could go on and on and on. But
well, you recently signed to Whiz Bang Booking and Management, which is Ian Thornton out of Huntington. And it's kind of the home of acts like Ona, Tim Lancaster, Tyler Childers, Quiet. You know, some of those bands
all
you
the
mentioned.
Bands I just mentioned.
Pretty much, yeah. so, except for Horse Traders, yeah. But who knows, maybe that
give
will happen.
Time,
yeah, give them time.
Ian's on it.
So, what does that mean to be a part of this organization that kind of helps promote and book these bands and get them around the area?
Oh, it's exciting. We're super excited to be working with Ian. I mean, you know, it's first of all, that stable of artists at Whiz Bang is, you know, off the hook. So you've got, it's pretty diverse, you know, and it's only going to grow because Ian is just such a hard worker and he's, you know, he's doing all the right things, it seems to me like, you know, but we're super excited to be working with them. And, you know, also it's really exciting to not have to book all the gigs myself, which is such a nightmare. As anyone who knows who's booked for anybody or booked for their own group, it is an absolute nightmare. And it's, I think, arguably the most difficult job to do in that world, you know what I mean, in the music industry, because it's like scheduling and you're dealing with personalities and you're dealing with money mm-hmm. and negotiating with people and clubs and promoters who don't want to give you much money a lot of the time, or, you know, they don't have a lot of money, or so you have to, there's like this balance. And, you know, some people are just so cut out for that. And most musicians are not.
Yeah.
You know, we're just not geared in that way.
Because you just care about making the music and right. less so about everything. I mean, everything, of course, the money is important for, you know, you want to see different places and,
yeah.
and grow your audience. But really, it's you want to focus on the music. That's why you're there in the band.
Exactly right. And so I don't have, you know, if I'm busy, you know, booking all these, and I still do some stuff, you know, on that end of things. But I want to, like you said, focus on the music and the best product that I can provide, you know, is gonna, you know, that's ultimately gonna benefit us the most if we have somebody else to do that other stuff. So.
Now, you mentioned before the, like, the people that the Horse Traders attract, Ona attract, they tend to, those audiences tend to follow all of the bands of that area. Like, if you go to a Horse Trader show in Huntington, that Horse Traders audience will also, pretty much all of them will show up to the Ona show
right.
or to the Tyler Childers right. show or any of the Huntington bands.
Right.
I don't really know if I get that feeling from Charleston's music. You said quiet. Quiet brings out a great following. But do those people come out to, say, Slugfest or one of your shows?
You know, some of the band members do. Mm-hmm. So that's... And you know what? That's an interesting thing that you just brought up, and I don't think I've ever even thought about it, but you just nailed it, really. There's a difference between, and it goes back to that kind of community camaraderie that the Grateful Dead had seen, and it's a community of people who are, I'm going to go see this show, and then because I know that this band is also tight with this band, I'm going to go see this band too, Band B and Band A. And so the crowds become pollinated or whatever.
That's pollinated.
And that's amazing. That, to me, is what I truly want for Charleston. And I think we don't have that as
much. I don't
much.
Think so either.
And I think what I was saying a second ago was that the bands... Charleston has always been a scene where, you know, you'd be playing... I've been playing in Charleston for a long time, and it's always been about musicians. You can look out in the crowd, and there might be nobody there, but there's a bunch. But then there are musicians, checking out musicians, and that's really encouraging. And that's really, I think, what kept the scene going through the kind of darker days, like, you know, when I was, you know, maybe 10, 12 years ago, where things were, you know, just not great for live music in Charleston. And then they started to, that kept it alive, was musicians supporting one another. But what I think we're seeing now is the onset of that community, the audience being a more impactful part of that in Charleston. I want to see that. And I want to see people continuing to go out and support musicians. I don't know why there's a difference, but, you know, maybe just because Huntington has more younger people.
Possibly. I mean, the sounds are... in the same family of sorts between the Horse Traders, Tyler Childers,
right.
and Ona. They're not the same, obviously, but they do...
in the same wheelhouse.
Well, yeah, sure. And maybe there is... I mean, I could see some similarities between your music, you know, Slugfest and Quiet in a way. Not like they're not obviously sisters or brothers, or but they, again, kind of in the same wheelhouse. But I don't really know. There is a certain energy to the type of thing going on in Huntington. I just... I don't know how it is that we could replicate it here. Is it something the bands need to do? Is it something we just need to show the audiences they should care about? Why it's important for them to, you know, attend things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think in this, you said something a second ago, which is Tyler and Ona and Horse Traders, they aren't exactly the same,
mm-hmm.
but they do kind of fit into a similar...
It's a good playlist.
Thing,
yeah.
I mean, and you know, the really strong songs. It's not a lot of extended jams
Mm-mm.
or stuff like very composed, you know, concise, strong songs,
mm-hmm.
which we know people love a really strong song. You know what I mean? What the difference is, and you know, Quiet and there are other bands around that have this too. But I think what it falls down on the audience, and I think what people, the audience has to do is say, you know, we're gonna take a chance on this, go check it out, just go check something out, and if it strikes you, then own that. Make that yours. You know what I mean? And I think that's what these, I guess I was trying to delineate the difference between what we're doing and what those guys are doing down there. But what the ultimate thing is that the crowds have owned that. They've it's to them that it's like their thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's important, that people have something to call their own. And so when you go out and listen to a band, you know, I went and saw Snarky Puppy for the first time a few years ago, and I really was unfamiliar with their music. And once I saw it, it was like, oh man, this is it. You know, everybody has those moments where like you hear something or see something where you're like, this is amazing, you know, and I'm going to rep this till I die. And so that's what people need to do in Huntington, is like, you got to find something to rep.
I mean, Charleston.
Charleston, excuse me. Yeah, no, the Huntington's got it. That's the point, right? So, yeah, but, yeah, you know, and embrace things that are different, because Slugfest is different from any of the other bands on Whiz Bang, and I think that's a great thing. And I think it's great that we have, you know, these other bands who are doing so well that are in the wheelhouse that they're in, you know, but I also want to see people continue to reach out and try to break into some other avenues, you know.
Let's talk about Slugfest.
Okay.
Why Slugfest? Why did you name it Slugfest?
Well, I'd like to come up with a fantastical story right now, but I respect you too much to do that. That's something I'll do
Thank
on
you.
Another radio station, maybe. you know, but so Slugfest, the graphic, I gave you a shirt.
The true Ian Bodie designed it.
Yes.
And it's of a slug that,
yes.
You know, is it basically looks like he's in a wrestling ring, and
yes.
he's playing, I assume, a bass guitar,
right?
Yeah. And, you know, he has a determined look on his face, like, yeah, I'm gonna wreck this ring. I don't know wrestling terms. So I'm just going to.
No, but you're basically nailing this right now. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, I had the idea, you know, I like the kind of, you know, several meanings, kind of double entendre. So, you know, with the Slugfest, it kind of, you know, conjures the image of, like, punchy, gnarly, kind of strong, you know, hard-hitting.
Slugs.
You know, yeah. Like, yeah, a slug in, like, the punch sense.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, God, you know, that was, like, felt like I got punched in the stomach. That show was so good, or that groove was so hard, you know. But then I thought, you know, how can we play on this, like, these like several meanings or whatever. So we're thinking like a boxing ring,
mm-hmm.
with the bass, you know, with the slug, the actual slug,
yeah.
You know,
putting the slug in Slugfest.
Yeah.
So you're saying your music packs a punch, right?
Yeah. Can I quote you on that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
You can use that on your CDs. You can say Joni says.
Totally going on social media. I'm tweeting that right now.
Packs a punch. Yeah. Okay. We'll see.
Slugfest band.
I just assumed it had something to do with a slug, you know, I don't know why, because it'd be, obviously the logo has a slug on it, but
right.
When you gave the design to Ian Bodie,
uh-huh.
Charleston artist, to do this design, what did you tell him, or what ideas did you give him?
Well, I gave him, you know, so usually when I get these ideas, I get really excited about them, and then I start thinking about them nonstop, and then I finally get to a point where I'm like, okay, now I'm going to call this person and ask him to do it. And so I'm talking to him, and we're hanging out or whatever, and I'm saying, you know, okay, so it's going to be like this, and we can have that, and this, and that, and this. And he's like, and Ian is so incredibly talented, and also so conceptually adept, you know, that he can just, and open. Open-minded, open person, you know, and so he's like, okay, great, you know, and so he took these ideas and went and started sketching, and then he'd send me something, and I'd say, okay, yeah, that's really good, let's keep this, and let's lose that, until we just trim the fat to a point, you know, and then we get the end result. So, and he also has done a couple other, we have graphics that were gonna release later that are play on that, you know, like, I'll just give you this one.
That's okay. Great. Oh, exclusive.
It's like, it's like a Babe Ruth slug. Okay. So there's like the baseball slug, like a slug.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like a slugger. Yeah.
You,
I understand.
You're picking up what I'm
saying. Yeah.
Putting. Yeah. And then, so, and he's, you know, just stuff like that. So, and you know, there will be one, like a big slug on a couch, you know, like a couch potato slug.
Yeah.
Just being very morose and, you know.
Couch potato slug. It's like troll dolls. Like there's different versions of
see
the slug.
See what I'm saying? See what I'm saying? And here everybody's like, what's up with this name? What's up with this artwork, man? But then they're going to be like 10 years from now, after I've launched a line of Slugfest trolls through Hasbro. I don't know, Hasbro, if you're listening, holler at your boy. I don't know if you can put that on the air or not, but so anyway, they're going to be like, oh my God, that was such a good idea. And now John's a multimillionaire with his slug figurines. And meanwhile, the band's broken up and, you know, no.
You know, one of my questions is going to be, what do you hope happens in the next like 10 years? You just laid out that plan, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I hope the band hasn't broken up. Other than that part, yeah, that would be amazing, especially the multi-million dollar toy idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's shave that down to 5 years. I'd like to see, you know, we've got this new tune coming out, a single, and that's going to help us segue into our next full-length record. And so that'll be within the next year. And we're going to actually do that with Bud Carroll. So we're really super excited to work with Bud. And we're getting all the songs written, you know, now. And we're rehearsing all that stuff now. So, but then, you know, I just like to keep making these records for me. And for, you know, what I, you know, what I would like to hear. Because I think that's the best litmus test, you know, instead of trying to make music that I think other people want to hear. If we just can kind of make ourselves happy and, you know, use our good taste, to quote Ira Glass, our favorite Ira Glass, you know, exploit our good taste and what have you. That would be ideal for me. I want to still continue to be a sideman. I don't know that I really want to take on being a band leader full time. It's a lot of stress and it's a lot of...
I can see you're already turning gray.
Oh, yeah. Just the thought of it is just made it a little bit less fun. The whole thing, just thinking about it. But, I mean, you know, if the opportunities really started coming in and was like, hey, you know, this is where we got to go. We got to really hit the road hard with this group. Then, of course, I would do that. And if I had the right musicians to take on the road, you know, because we're all so busy. This is a fun thing to do in the gaps when we're not doing other things. So I've just started touring and playing out with Fletcher's Grove. And so that's been taking up a lot of time, you know, doing that along with Bob's band and also Johnny Statt's doing that intermittently throughout the year. So I'm hoping, you know, in the next 5 years, you know, maybe Fletcher's Grove, this thing could turn into some good stuff. I'm thinking about going into the studio and doing something. And, of course, Bob, you know, Bob's band, we're always recording and writing new music and playing every chance we can
get. Joy to the World that you always do at the end
super
of the year.
Super excited for already. It's what, it's is
it's
it
summer.
Not even June
it's
yet?
Summer now.
Yeah, it's not even, it's like June 1 on Monday, and I'm already excited for Chris, you know, for the holiday show, so...
So you do have the new single coming out, Kickin' Slippers, with Slugfest. There's a line in it. What is it? Kick it in my bathrobe, party in the street.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What does that mean besides that you kick it
in
your bathrobe and party in the street?
When I wrote that lyric, I was, you know, trying to be, I was thinking of some very highbrow words, you know. No, I don't
Thanks,
know.
Thanks, Garrison. Yeah.
Hold on, let me get my nose. My nose was so going on. When I was writing, I can't even do it right now. So
that was better than I do.
Not even going to try.
Garrison Keillor, everybody.
You're welcome. yeah, no, there's some very poignant lyrics in that tune. It's pretty nonsensical. It's really, the gist of it is this. I got a pair of house shoes for Christmas, last Christmas. And upon my request, I did ask for them.
Wow.
And I did get them.
Okay.
And I was very excited. They're wool lined, fake leather, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But they're wool lines. They're very comfortable. And I've fallen in love with them. So much so that during the blizzard a few months back at the end of the winter, we were snowed in, okay? And I didn't have anything to do but, you know, make fires and drink coffee and, you know, or whatever, and hang out, and was left to my own devices, trapped in the home. So I'm like, this is great. And so I just wanted to write, I wouldn't call it a love song, because I don't think I really expressed adequately my love for these slippers, but I just wanted to make a song about footwear, okay? And kind of play on, you know, kind of, again, this kind of double entendre thing. So, you know, what a bleep kicker, you know, when you hear the song, I'm not going to explain it too much. Okay. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and draw and just put it in reverse for a second, because I don't want to explain it too much. All you need to know really is that it is about footwear, and specifically about my house shoes that I love so much.
And is that the cover art?
It is, okay. Yes. Yeah, who Chris Woodall, mm-hmm. Great graphic designer here in West Virginia, and he did the cover art for this one, and once, you know, I love it. I just love it so much.
John Ingram, this was a great conversation. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Joni. Thank you so much.
John Ingram's Slugfest new single is Kickin' Slippers. Get ready for a new full length from the band in the near future. Hear more hashtag WV Music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And for more hashtag WV Music chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/WV Music. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening. Kick it in my bathrobe.